having a creative lifestyle allowed or gave me all the channels necessary to find the next step. And so for a lot of people who didn't have corporate jobs out of college and just went straight to blogging, they don't have the experience to like go into an office setting, or they haven't.
Well, they don't have those soft skills.
No, they haven't given themselves an opportunity for once it ends. And I had the option to leave on my own, but like the internet decides if you're canceled or if they're over following you or not. Like, you don't have control of that. So maybe one day it just ends, and then what?
Welcome to the Creative Brief. My guest today is Crystal Faircloth, who grew her Instagram account to 250,000 followers as a lifestyle blogger. I talked to Crystal about how she did it, what success on social media platforms actually looks like, and why she decided to transition out. It's a great conversation, and I'm stoked you're here for it. I'm Brian Athey, and this is The Creative Brief.
Okay, I am live with Crystal Faircloth, my dear friend. Just to kind of set the stage, Crystal, you and I went to LSU together. We actually grew up like in the same area. Our high schools played football together, but we went to LSU at the same time. We got into graphic design school at the same time, and we made our way through it at the same time.
We sure did.
Any war stories that you can remember, or do you remember fondly?
I feel like I am one of those people who looks back always fondly. Like, I always look back with optimistic, like positive thoughts about my past. So for, even though I'm sure there were like some graphic design school, like trauma, I don't remember it. Right. So I always look back with like very endearing, like wonderful memories of that time. Especially of our little tight knit group that we had in design school, Slice Bread.
That's right.
Because we're the best thing since sliced bread. We named ourselves. I think there are so many things in my life. I think about this all the time that can be tied back to that time, which is
definitely like a great program to be in. But right after I graduated, I don't know if I ever used like Flash development or, gouache, or wasn't it gouache? Like, what we did, we were in like our design school was not like how to use Photoshop, it was like how to make collages by cutting out pictures from magazines.
I just had a very vivid memory come back to me. So in oil painting, like during our final, it was this I think the series finale of Friends, and you convinced our painting teacher to let you bring a television to our final review of our paintings. And you sat in the corner and you watched, I don't know how you connected it to cable back then, but you sat in the corner and didn't pay attention to any of the final reviews. And you just watched the episode of Friends, and she let you do it. And I don't know how you did that, but that was pretty impressive.
I haven't thought about that in a long time, but that is a true story. And I think back, like, that's one of the things
like
that I think
back
on.
Like a small box TV. You brought it in to the art room.
I don't necessarily look back on that, you know, proudly, I can't say. But it was like, people watch Friends all the time now. People like binge Friends on Netflix. It's a whole thing. But at the time, like in the early 2000s, like it was just as big then as it is, if not bigger then as it is now. And the finale was coming up, and I was just, for some reason at this stage of my life, I was appalled that she did not understand the significance of this moment. To me, it was like, you know, our parents watching MASH or something. And I just had to be a part of it. I feel like anybody that's watching this now, and like, I mean, I only stream stuff now, so it's weird to be a part of a television event. I don't know if anybody knows what I'm talking about, but to me, it was very significant and I had to watch it. And I don't know how I got away with that. I'm pretty sure I got an A in that painting class.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you did too. And you always had some way of like talking your way out of like the reviews or like something. Like, I don't know. You had the gift of like negotiation. I don't know.
That was my jam. I loved that time. I think about that all the time. Like, I still wish that there was some kind of master agency that we could launch and bring us all back together. But I feel like everybody has gone their own ways.
Yes, you're right.
Shout out to Bo and Carrie, and shout out to Allison, Allustration. I miss them. Yeah. One day.
Yeah, it was a good group. Yep. We can work towards it.
So you graduated school, and I feel like right towards the end of LSU is when you took this trip with your girls to California and y'all blogged the whole thing. Do you remember this?
We took many trips to California and blogged.
So there was Facebook at that time. There was not like an Instagram. There were no stories. There was no Twitter. But y'all were like on Blogspot or something, or like Blogger.
Oh, yeah. I started a blog. So once I graduated from LSU, I had an internship for part of our internship course in graphic design. I worked for LSU Athletics. And so when I graduated, I got offered a full-time job at LSU doing graphic design, which I learned so many things, so many more things than I did in school.
For sure.
Pre-press, color product, you know, just all the things you didn't quite get to in school. But it wasn't like I was passionate about sports. I'm not athletic. I don't follow sports at all. So I started a blog on the side just to have like a little like passion project. And this is like in the era of Pinterest was in beta. I mean, it didn't even exist yet. Instagram had just launched. It was in chronological order with like weird filters.
And it was just your friends.
Something fun. And people ask me all the time, like, how did you get started? How did you jump into like becoming an influencer? So long story short, I started this blog, it's for fun, and it turned into like an actual thing that I could monetize. And at a certain point, I was able to take it on full time and do it, you know, as a job. And people ask me how I did it, and the answer is really I just did it at the right time. And it's, you know, recognizing an opportunity in that moment. That was it. Like, if I'm not doing it now, it's now or never. And if you were to try to start a blog today, it would be astronomically more difficult to do because there are so many people doing it.
Right.
So it was like, nobody's doing this. I'm going to try it.
So did you feel like you had momentum behind
crazy.
You? Like, I remember I remember you know, you did the blog, you were at the athletic department, you were posting on Instagram just like anybody else would, but like, let's not be humble about it. You've got, I don't know if you are even sort of actively doing Instagram anymore, but you still have like a 250,000 followers, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And it's weird to say out loud, it's strange.
You felt like you had that momentum as you were.
So I tracked it every month. I measured it every month to gauge like, okay, the percentage of, you know, how much income am I making? How much am I increasing each month? How was the increase in brand opportunities coming in each month? And kind of just predicted like at this point, and I knew in my head, like at this point when I'm bringing in this amount, it will be like more than what I'm making at my full-time job.
Full-time.
But I'm also not doing this full-time yet. So what would happen if I put in all of my full-time hours into it?
Right.
So, I didn't completely jump ship with no sort of life preserver. Like, I knew the numbers were there.
So you were doing both at the same time. And like, when you say you were working at the athletic department, you were director level, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. And this is SEC athletics.
I didn't have kids yet, you know, okay. Like I did it at night when I got home. I wasn't married yet.
But how, okay, so what kind of hours were you putting in at this point? Like,
I was working all day. It was the fun part that made me keep doing it after work, like putting in more hours to something. It was kind of like a challenge, like, look, can I get it there? Like, never being quite satisfied, so I keep going.
Did you feel like there was like a game to it? Like, were you starting to learn, you know, if I post at this time, if I post this type of picture, like you refined as you went?
Oh yes. Like I would track everything. I knew which pictures would perform better than others. I knew like went down to what kind of pattern on the clothes, like floral print for whatever reason, best resonated with my followers. So if it was floral print, I'm posting it. Yeah. Well, like it was just building a brand. You're essentially building a brand, but it's yourself.
And you're doing it like you're doing it. You're building the plane while you're flying it, right? Like this is, it's all happening and you've just got to figure out what's next in real time.
It's very much the startup mindset and you're building a brand, but it is, you know, all about yourself, which sounds so, you know, superficial, which is what influencers, you know, typically the stereotype is like, this is a very superficial, you know, profession or career. You're trying to influence the way people shop. And there is a level to it that, you know, at some point started to feel inauthentic, mm-hmm. you know, because you're building this brand, but you start to adapt yourself to the brand that you're portraying on the internet. So I could tell I was like, there's a point where you start catering to your audience, but it's not necessarily something that felt true to me. Like there's just a whole lot of things that go into mentally being an influencer that I wasn't really prepared for. Especially as I started to have children, like how am I going to share them on the internet and feel comfortable? There's all these things that you don't plan for that now my family's more important. And so that's the point. That was like kind of the point where I was like, all right, this has been fun. Yeah, but I think I'm good.
I feel like I remember. Well, you know, here's what I remember. You're gaining traction. You're a pinch of lovely at that point. Mm-hmm. And what was the first brand deal that came through?
I don't even remember. There are a lot of things that kind of came through as gifted in the beginning before mm-hmm. brands paid influencers and it was all just gifted items. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I think like the first one I remember being really excited about was Bare Minerals, like the makeup.
Okay.
I think that was kind of like, I was like, oh, wow, I could get like legitimate brands to work with me.
Right.
Yeah. But you do it at a there are sacrifices to it as well, because you're now expected now in current influencer world, you're expected to put everything out. And at the time I could be very protected behind a blog and there wasn't really Instagram. And so, you know, there's just kind of like more that goes into it now that I'm okay walking away from a little bit of that.
Yeah. I want to ask you about that for sure. But before I do, I have to know, like Bare Minerals, like, okay, that's a flex, but Mercedes is the flex. How did that happen?
Yeah. I honestly don't know. I remember they reached out while I was pregnant mm-hmm. about like, you know, would you be interested in talking about, you know, family vehicles? And I was just like, so miserable. Let's be honest. I was like, I am not in a good place mentally to be talking about cars or like working on this collaboration, because my first pregnancy, I took no maternity leave. Like there is no maternity leave when you're your own boss and you are the brand. Like you can't just stop for months at a time to, you know, take a break. So I tried to slim down my projects as much as I could, but still be present on the internet. So we revisited the partnership afterwards. And that was one of my favorite, like I kind of walked away, but I kept the Mercedes partnership because they were awesome to work with. I mean, it was a great gig. It was good. That was one of my favorites.
Pretty sweet. I remember looking at that and I was like, oh, Crystal made it. Like, she made it. Like, I watched your count grow and I watched you travel all over the place. I watched you do all the vacations and have the photographer. And I mean, if you don't follow, it's at Crystal Faircloth, right?
Yes, now it is.
It's worth checking out Crystal's account because it is immaculate. I mean, it's like beautifully curated, amazing. I mean, in a lot of ways, like pioneering. You look at this, you look at influencers now, and like there's sort of this formula that you can follow, but you were part of the first class that was like inventing a lot of this. And what I always thought about you as I've followed this journey was that you somehow intuited where it was going to go before everybody else was doing it. I would watch you be the one that was paving the way. And I thought that was so impressive. I thought that was so exciting.
In the same way, I always knew that I wouldn't do it forever. Uh-huh. It's something that Jordan and I talked about too. I never thought I'd be an influencer forever. Like, I always knew like, yeah, but I'm going to probably want to do something else. And I think, you know, when we talk about creative journeys or creative lifestyles, like, I'm a person who never wants to be stuck doing the same thing. And I can look back in time and realize that I continue to find new things. Like, once I've tackled something, I'm like, all right, I did it. And I've been really, you know, I feel good about how I've done it. I like pack up and leave. I'm like, all right, I'm on to the next thing.
Well, that was it. It was like, you know, one day you were working with Mercedes. And then I remember, you know, following a few posts where you even you're talking to your audience and you're like, I don't know how I'm going to do this whole, like, I didn't sign up to be a mom blogger. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I am now. And I don't know how this translates. And it felt like you dabbled in a few things like podcasting and you did some more like traditional marketing stuff until you figured out what the next step was. Like, what was that whole transition period like? Because you really did just kind of like flip a switch and it was off. You still have all your followers.
I'm a Gemini. That's what we do. Like, when the chapter ends, we move on to the next chapter. So I did it with athletics. I was like, I'm done here. And I started blogging full time. Once I got to the point where I was really feeling kind of weird about being a mom blogger, didn't feel great to share all of our private moments with strangers. There were a couple instances where in restaurants, people recognized my child that didn't feel great. Oh, yeah. And people approached the table and be like, we recognize Bennett from your Instagram stories. And I was like, okay, this is not like mama bear kicked in. And I was like, I really need to rethink how I go forward with this, because this was around COVID lockdown. It was almost COVID lockdown. And that's when this movement was like, you need to be raw and authentic and share your real life and everything that's going on in your house and how you're coping with the pandemic. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable sharing any of this, to be honest. Like, I need to keep some of this very close. So I just kind of like pushed back, didn't feel great about it. I still kept on going, even though I knew, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to really want to continue on this path. Baby number two was really the final, I don't know, something just told me like, it's time to phase this out. So I decided to take a real maternity leave with baby number two and just see how I felt, if I felt like coming back or not. And there was no official goodbye because I went on the maternity leave and I was like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to go back. Like, I don't need to.
You Gemini.
I took a real maternity leave, and while I was on break, I got approached about Matchpoint.
So that's the big thing. Like, this is not you're not just part of this company, you're executive level at this company, and I don't know anything about it. You have to talk to me about how this happened.
So it happened because Matchpoint, what was the, you know, it started because NIL, name, image, likeness, was going to become legal for college athletes. People in Baton Rouge were thinking ahead and they were like, we need to get ahead of this for LSU. Like, the better NIL opportunities for athletes, the better athletes we get at our school. Right. And so they came to me like, Crystal, we know tech. We know how to build apps. We don't know anything about influencers. We don't know how these kids are going to learn how to make money off Instagram. we would like to understand, because when I had a management agency too, who would, you know, negotiate my contracts and, you know, there's so many things that go into being an influencer. You got to know how to do your taxes. you've got to adhere to FTC guidelines. You give all these kids the opportunity to make millions with one Instagram post, but they don't know what to do after that.
Yeah.
So like they kind of brought me in.
The first paycheck and they burn it all before it's
gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So I was all of a sudden teaching college kids how to be influencers.
On the actual instructor level too, like, have you been back to LSU or have you taught classes on this?
I have not taught classes. I have been a speaker in a class. Now LSU has a full like NIL department to kind of like help provide lessons for them.
Okay.
But in the beginning, like some of the bigger talent, like Jaden Daniels, like he was in the Matchpoint office. Like we were working to get him deals.
That's so cool.
You know, that, which is kind of cool for me to say out loud. Like that's pretty cool. Like I took one of his pictures for his, you know, for his projects. But it, you know, it evolved and now Matchpoint is really moved in a different way so that, you know, the app was built for college athletes to be able to book deals, get paid, record all of, you know, their deliverables, because you have to have proof that you've done the work to get paid.
Okay.
Or it could come back from the NCAA. But it is like the payment processor for NIL. And right now it's the payment processor for Bayou Traditions, which is the collective for LSU. So it's turned into kind of like a SaaS model to where you can replicate across different schools if they wish.
Smart move.
So during all of this, we also helped on the brand side. So for brands who had not worked with influencers before, I was also like,
ambassador.
Like locally, you know, locally, the smaller like Baton Rouge brands who had never worked with an influencer before, I was the one who was like helping that process as well. So I was helping with Small Sliders, which is a Baton Rouge fast food concept, quick service concept. Our founder is Brandon Landry, who started Walk-Ons.
Yeah.
Drew Brees is a part owner. I was helping their marketing department with LSU baseball players. And an opportunity came. They had a new CEO come in from Krispy Kreme. She is scaling Smalls to be, you know, nationwide.
The next big thing. Walk-Ons, I guess, has become a nationwide thing, right? Or it's at least all over.
Yeah.
It's all over Texas now.
Yes. If it's not considered nationwide, it is like soon to be.
Okay.
So I met Maria because I was working with Smalls. Maria's the new CEO. And she was like, "You are coming to Smalls." I'm like, "Am I?" I didn't have orange painted on my canvas for 2023, but so that's what you don't know. What I was saying, there might be some things you don't know yet.
Right.
It's been a year.
Unreal. Yeah. What does that mean? Like, what does it mean that you're this like ambassador for Smalls? You're still like working on their marketing?
No.
You're still like, what is the
my official title right now is Director of Brand and Product Marketing.
Okay. That's
so I oversee, like, it's crazy. So I oversee all the things that I technically would have done for my blog. I oversee the graphic design, oversee the social media, and I oversee like what, you know, and I'm a part of the brand team. So like, what are we just introduced like a brand refresh. So new logo, new colors, new everything. And then I also,
you did that brand exercise.
We worked with an agency. We worked with an agency to produce the brand refresh. And then we do local can marketing because we call our locations cans.
Okay.
Cause they're made out of sea cans, shipping containers.
Okay.
So when we open a restaurant, we call it a can opening.
Good, you know, like it's good branding.
You know, yeah, it's it's like the same startup mentality of starting a blog or like starting an IL app. You got to build it all from scratch. So that's what I'm doing again for Smalls.
Are you still affiliated with Matchpoint?
I still am. But okay. I think, you know, I met with everybody on the team and they're like, Crystal, we think, you know, we think this is great for you to go over in this lane for now.
So you can still be a part of this thing that's scaling in this direction. But meanwhile, mm-hmm. there's like this up and coming national restaurant franchise yeah. that has tapped you to be their brand guru. I mean, it sounds like you've got a team of people that you've got to stay on top of all the time.
That's what I'm not. I'm working on delegating because I like to just like do all the things like the way I want them to be done. Mm-hmm. But this is the opportunity for me to like be a better leader and a better delegator. But because in past lives, I was just doing it all myself. So this is where I have an opportunity to have some developmental growth and like delegation and like leading a team that I wouldn't have gotten previously.
I could pick your brain about this all day. Do you have a good project manager? Do you have a good like person that integrates all these ideas that you have and make sure that everything is up to your standards?
That, you know, I'm making progress and letting go. So the project manager is me.
Well, that's
but yes, we're working on that too. I'm moving some of that over.
I talk to creative folks a lot, and this is like a struggle that is near and dear to my heart because I am a perfectionist and I'm so particular about everything that, you know, whatever my company is doing at the time, like it's got to meet a certain standard. And I always thought that the best way to scale was to get other creative people that were just as much of a perfectionist and even more skilled than me and knew what they were doing. And over and over again, I would run into these problems of like, it's great. It's just not what I wanted, you know, or it's great, but I didn't explain it right. And I also run into the things like if it's objectively good, but I subjectively don't like it, if my personal taste don't like it, is it worth picking a fight, not a fight, but giving critique over and over and over again to get it to be subjectively what I like when I know it accomplishes the objective goal or the objective mission of the client. And it's been a years long struggle for me. It's like the hardest part of this job.
Oh, I'll still open a file and like scoot some text over or like, I still do it. I can't help it.
You still tweak a little bit?
I tweak. Yeah. I'm trying to be better about it, but yeah, I think this is just something I'm going to have to continue to work on, but this is the opportunity that allows me to work on those things that I know that I'm not, you know, great at, which is giving up.
To wrap that thought, the plan was to always hire more, producers, more folks that could make things. Cause I always thought like, well, I'll just, you know, I'll be a creative director. I'll be a manager, you know? And what I realized over time is that like management is really tough for my personality. Like my brain does not manage people as well as it provides some vision. It tries to provide some inspiration. It provides some direction, but I can do step one where I give the big speech and then I can do the last step where I give the big presentation. But in between, making sure all those trains run on time is really hard for me because like dirty secret, my trains don't run on time. Like I work whenever I feel like it or I make progress whenever I feel like it. And so like telling people how it has to be and traffic copying is very difficult for me, especially not mm-hmm. knowing how other people are motivated or how, you know, we have this whole thing at work where we've gone through people's like Enneagram levels and love languages and all this. So we know how to talk to each other more effectively. But the cheat code is excellent, excellent project managers. It's excellent folks that like I've got a production director at Push that makes everything better and no ego, all empathy, all like goal oriented, all performance driven. And all she cares about is getting, like making sure everybody is happy doing their work and doing it their best. And she, like somehow the rest of it works out. But over and over again, I tell folks, like, get your integrators in place. There's this great book called, I'm going to mess it up. I think it's Rocket Fuel or it's something like that, but it's about the visionary and integrator mindset. There's a creative person that has all the ideas, but can't ever get them done. And then there's the person that integrates all those ideas and helps them get done. And there are countless examples of that throughout different companies, like Walt and Roy Disney is the one I always look at. But
taking all the book suggestions.
That's the cheat code right there.
Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Really good project managers.
Last night, I was so exhausted. We had like a really long work situation and I laid in the dark with a face mask on with an audiobook. I was like, I need professional development. And I like listened to my audiobook last night before bed. So send me all the suggestions.
Happy to do it. I mean, you're still juggling. You really don't do a lot of, unless you're on like TikTok or something. Did you get into TikTok?
No.
I
check the app for research purposes. Mm-hmm. I do get sucked into rabbit holes there because I think some people are just really funny and I'll just stay up laughing. So if I'm not listening to an audiobook with a face mask on, I'm laughing at TikTok at night before bed. So those are my two rituals and there's nothing else. But I don't personally create TikTok content.
If you were advising someone that was just getting started, I mean, would you tell them that there's a particular platform or avenue to start growing an audience, or is there a particular methodology, or is it still just like, well, is it so saturated at this point that it's basically just right place at right time still?
No, I think you have to know who you're trying to reach, because if you're trying to make it big on TikTok and like really, instead of just having maybe one viral moment, have like a consistently good TikTok, you have to understand Gen Z, which makes no sense to me. I have a 15, almost 16 year old sister. And when she talks to me, I'm like, what are you saying? What are you telling me? Like, it's like the conversation.
What's the secret?
She tells me all the new words they're using.
My son is 10 and he's all about that too. He was like, Dad, you don't even know the level of my Riz. And I was like, what does that mean?
I'm like, what are you saying? Is that something good or is that something bad? She will straight up come over to my house and cut me. Like I had something on. I was wearing something one day and she's like, Crystal, that outfit, you look just like a backup dancer from Hamilton. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean? Like,
is that a good thing?
I don't think so. Or she'll say things like, the mom fits really out momming today. I'm like, that's what I am. Like, what does that mean? She'll borrow my clothes. I'm like, but is this good? I don't know. Or just high school things are so different from when we were in high school. And so to really be successful on TikTok, you have to be one of them. Because that's how the trends catch on. I was reading last night about this Snoopy. Have you seen this plush Snoopy doll that's gone viral on TikTok? Because Gen Z loves puffer jackets. And okay. So CVS introduced this Snoopy plush that's wearing a light blue puffer. And TikTok has sold it out in every CVS just because it doesn't make any sense, Brian. It doesn't make sense. But if you can think like this and think like them, you have every opportunity to be successful on TikTok.
Are you working with folks? Did you work with Livy? Did you work with Livy at all? Because she seems to have figured TikTok out.
She's one of the ones who paved the way very early on. Like okay. She did it right when you had to do it to get your following up. I would say it's probably substantially harder now than probably when she started doing all these things. So the Livy Fund, which she kind of started, is running through Matchpoint. So it's not that we're booking her like brand. She doesn't need help booking brand deals, let's be honest. Okay. But she did set up a fund that is connected to Bayou Traditions, which is the collective for LSU, which is run through Matchpoint.
Good for her.
Yeah.
That's awesome. She's like the best ambassador right now. I think that that's what's always been so interesting about Matchpoint is talking about being at like the right place at the right time. You guys opened this up in Baton Rouge, which is the epicenter mm-hmm. of this whole NIL movement. Like all the best athletes come through LSU, it seems like.
All the best. I mean, two championships in 1 year, baseball. And, you know, we got a Heisman this year, women's basketball championship. Like this was a big year for LSU athletics. Big year and, you know, a big reason why people should support NIL if they want to have championship teams, you know.
What do you think about the high school stuff?
I think it's too, I mean, I think when you get to high school, it's going to really depend on the support of their families and parents, like, which, you know, when you put a child in the position to make a lot of money, I think the parents are going to have to be very active in how that plays out.
I'm terrified of that. I mean,
yeah, that's scary.
The kids are just, I mean, Harrison's got a watch. And we're like very scared because he's been asking for a phone. I mean, like we did the watch thing just to try and like plug that dam a little bit. Uh-huh. But my daughter is 8. And her friend has a phone. We've got a bunch of kids with like, I coach Everly's basketball team and they have watches and phones. And I don't think that anybody is on social media by any means, but that's coming. I feel like that's right around the corner.
So somebody told me, and I'll never unhear this, but like once you give a child a phone, their childhood's over.
Oh, I did see that. Oh, it breaks my
heart.
And
I'm like, you're never getting a phone.
I know. Well, do you?
But yeah, but what they, you give them the device to start making content. Like at that point, mm-hmm. you know, like, are they putting it somewhere? I don't know.
See if this rings true to you. I'm just curious. Like anybody that I've talked to that has found a level of success, especially a level like you have as an influencer, kind of hits this either burnout stage or gets a little jaded about it. They sort of see the other side of the curtain and they're like, oh, I worked all the way to get here and I don't like this so much. And there seems to be this, there's sort of this trend of getting to the finish line or accomplishing this big thing and then realizing like, oh, I can't remember what I was chasing. I don't want to do this anymore. Like that doesn't just seem mm-hmm. to be a story that you've told, but is that like a warning that you would give folks?
I would give a lot of people a warning. A lot of bloggers that were friends of mine and that, you know, we used to travel with, we used to see at conferences and things, like they're literally are like, Crystal, how did you do this? How did you get out of this?
Really?
Like, but like, how did you transition out of this? And they're like trying to figure out what they're going to do next. And I think the difference was like, I always knew there would be something next. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of these people built their businesses if they were going to like, they were going to have a blog forever. They're going to blog as a grandmother. Like, I don't know. But you got to have.
Grandma blogging is not a thing yet.
Yeah. Like,
is it? But it
grandmother
will be.
Blogging, like, I don't know, but it's almost like no one really had a plan. And for me, I was like, you know, once I fall out of love with this, I'll, you know, figure out the next step. But having a creative lifestyle gave me all the channels necessary to find the next step. And so for a lot of people who didn't have corporate jobs out of college and just went straight to blogging, they don't have the experience to like go into an office setting, or they haven't.
Oh, they don't have those soft skills.
No, they haven't given themselves an opportunity for once it ends. I had the option to leave on my own, but like the internet decides if you're canceled or if they're over following you or not. Like you don't have control of that. So maybe one day it just ends and then what?
Well, one of the scariest things that I think I just connected is that you said earlier that the more you invested in your growth on these platforms, the more you sort of became your brand. You started the line between your brand and you started to blur. But like you were mm-hmm. in your 20s, late 20s, as you were developing all this stuff, right? I mean, if you were in formative years, like if your personality is actually being shaped by the brand that you're trying to put out into the world, I mean, if that were to be canceled, or if people stopped validating it with followership or likes
brands,
or brand deals,
jump ship,
then who are you? Like, you would really have to question who you are.
So I kind of went through that. Probably took me a few months, but I at some point I looked in my closet. I was like, I don't even like any of these clothes. Like, I wear a lot of black and like neutral color now. And my whole blog was like pink and floral print. And I created like this whole like colorful world that like now I don't even wear color. It's very strange and bizarre, but I'm like, I became the brand, but it wasn't necessarily me anymore. So I guarantee there's a lot of people who were younger than me who don't know themselves outside of what they've created. 100%. There's going to be like some sort of weird shift for a lot of people when they have either walk away from it, or I don't know, somehow, you know, they're done with their influencing days.
That's heavy.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm glad you were level-headed enough to be at the place that you were and transition out. I'm so glad, you know, that you had family and you had new opportunities, and you were always so just like, I think what I remember most about you, Crystal, is you were sort of unfazed by the ups and downs of our experience at the LSU Design School. I felt like there were constantly curveballs being thrown at us, or we'd get a hard assignment or a bad grade, or you'd give a bad review or a bad presentation or get a bad review. And you just always stayed level through all that. Like, if it didn't go your way, you know, and if it did go your way, because you always knew where you were going, I guess.
I guess I'm still the same way. It's kind of weird that you say that. Yeah. I just feel like there's always like another opportunity, or I've cultivated the skills necessary to pivot if I need to. Like, that's the important part I would drive home. Like, if you are in a creative field, soak up as much as you can so that you can pivot whenever you want. For me, I could not be locked into one thing, one career path. I don't know how it wouldn't be good.
Yeah. That's creative mindset right there. It's very hard to get stuck in a rut.
Yes.
Very hard to get stuck in a rut. Yeah. I want to end by telling a little story that is really just a thank you to you. When you were at the athletic department, we were graduating. You stayed through Baton Rouge. I went back home. I was in Bossier. Mm-hmm. And you hit me up with this opportunity to draw a basketball poster. Do you remember this?
Oh my God. Yes. I forgot.
This is like anytime anybody asks me to like talk about my career, this is where the story starts for me, because I graduated with not a whole lot of plan, no plan. I had no idea where I was doing. And you helped me land this poster project for the LSU basketball team. And it was, you know, draw the LSU players like comic book characters. And I'm pretty sure you helped me price it too, because I like lowballed myself. I think I came in and I was like, I'll do every player and the whole poster series and the playing cards and everything else for like $1,000 or something. And you were like, up, go more. Hello. So Crystal, I got that job. It was a $5,000 gig. I drew those posters for like a month, maybe. It was like a 6-week project. And that $5,000 at the time was more money than I thought I was ever going to make before. I thought I could retire off that $5,000. That $5,000 is how I got to go to LA, to Nashville. And like, it wasn't until that money ran out that I landed on a couch in Washington, D.C. So like, that whole sort of transition, you kept me eating for like a year. And that was all you.
Mind blown. I did not know any of this.
You don't remember that?
And I kind of I forgot about the poster, but I didn't know the significance that it played in like your life.
That's how it started. Yeah. You got me like, I got to meet the basketball team, got to meet, was it Coach Brady, I think at the time?
Was it? I think it was.
Yeah. Got to meet them, and then, got interviewed on local TV. It was nice. I felt like I had made it. And then I spent like 8 months traveling and following around a band and, you know, just randomly moving around the country. So it was, I could have still be living at my parents' house if it wasn't you, Crystal. You made it happen. Yeah.
That's a blast from the past. I really enjoy that. And that poster and all the work was like awesome. So yeah.
Until we can get the old band back together, until we can get sliced bread into our own agency and lead all these big brands. I wish you the best of luck. I'm so excited about this new opportunity that you've had. It's Small Sliders.
Yes.
Small Sliders.
Yes, we just hit 12K on Instagram today. So I'm working my magic on Instagram still a little bit.
You can still do it. Still got chops. Where should people check you out? Just to give a little plug at the end of the episode.
You know what? Like, I'm really kind of leaning more towards LinkedIn these days, which is wild.
Oh my gosh. All right.
That's LinkedIn. You can follow me on Instagram, but like, don't expect too many posts. Right, so on Instagram is crystal.faircloth, and on LinkedIn it's Crystal Faircloth. And I'm standing in front of an orange shipping container building that serves cheeseburger sliders. That's how you'll know it's me.
You're a boss now. I love it. I love it. Always have been, always will be. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on another episode of The Creative Brief. Be sure to subscribe to this channel and share this episode with your friends. It's a great way to help me produce more episodes and spread the reach of this podcast. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Brian Athey. We'll see you next time.